This week on Diverted.
I was always around football. I used to carry the players' boots. I remember when my grandfather would bring the Brazilian players and I would wash their boots and everything. So it's definitely, football is built and stored in my DNA.
In episode 6, we're going to Central America and we'll be taking you to a Belizean Premier League game. We'll be visiting the basketball-obsessed highlands of Guatemala.
You need to have a name model that people support. Like, for instance, basketball, you have LeBron James. It starts like that. You have to find good players so that you can sell it to the public so they can come out and support.
And we will experience firsthand the 2 minutes and 58 seconds where it looked like Costa Rica were going to qualify for the knockout stages of the 2022 World Cup.
I am once again embracing my new brothers.
What are you doing?
Creating chaos.
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. A very good evening to you. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. This is Tuesday's Off the Ball. The Champions League semi-finals are officially upon us. These always are brilliant fixtures. It's Arsenal versus Paris Saint-Germain first up. The first leg coming your way from 8 o'clock tonight at the Emirates Stadium. We will be joined from 7:30 by Graham Hunter to look ahead to both of these first leg semi-finals. Throughout the evening then, Keith Tracy is going to be in studio watching on. I think we're all open with the fact that Keith Tracy is an Arsenal fan, so maybe a tense Keith Tracy will be joining us for the evening. In the football show after 9 o'clock, we'll obviously have live updates from the Emirates Stadium coming your way. We'll also have Amber Barrett and Claire O'Riordan joining us in the football show. They both play for Standard Liège, who won the Belgian Cup last week. So looking forward to chatting to them. They beat Anderlecht in the final. They'll also, of course, pay tribute to Louise Quinn, who announced her retirement from football today. Between 8 and 9 then tonight, we're going to be playing you episode 6 of Diverted. This week, we're in Central America. So if you're interested in Guatemalan basketball, if you're interested in the Belizean Premier League in football, or if you're interested in the Costa Rica perspective of the 2022 World Cup, then tonight's the night for you on Off the Ball. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 087 9180 180 is our number if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. You can get us on social media as well at Off the Ball. Cameron Hill's news round is coming momentarily. Cameron, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Owen. How are you?
Very well. And Mick McCarthy is here. Mick, how are you?
Fine.
I'm not confident about Arsenal tonight. I'll tell you why. It's a very scientific approach to why I'm not confident about Arsenal. So I watched the two legs of the Real Madrid clash, two of the high points in recent history for Arsenal Football Club. I watched both of these legs in Australia. So I'm missing two factors tonight. The first factor that I'm missing is that it's not the middle of the night. It's very much bright outside. There's beautiful sunshine. I haven't woke up in the middle of the night to watch this. Yeah. Therefore, Arsenal can't possibly do such a thing. And second of all, I'm not seeing Craig Foster or Mark Bosnich on my television screen here in front of me. It's TNT pundits. And as a result of that, Arsenal can't possibly repeat the feat because I have to be in Australia for Arsenal to do something amazing.
Anyone who has ever watched football in Australia knows that Craig Foster is very much their Eamon Dunphy character.
Apparently so.
Quite cantankerous, has been there forever.
Right.
Like, I mean, when I was there in 2006 watching Arsenal get to the Champions League final, Every Wednesday morning, as it would have been, with a crazy Arsenal fan from West Cork that I lived with and loved. He was a spectacular guy, but my God, did he love Arsenal. He was screaming 5 o'clock. I was the only one who would get up with him at 5 o'clock in the morning screaming at Henri and Bergkamp and everybody else, that amazing run. And Craig Foster was there even back then.
Wow.
Just like being seriously cantankerous, but in a really entertaining and enjoyable way.
I really enjoyed watching them, I must say. Yeah. Like, I didn't really come with any preconceived notions about them. I thought it was, you know, quite cool to be watching Mark Bosnich give his thoughts. I think they're a great duo. Really, really entertaining. Again, this is all couched in the fact that I just witnessed Arsenal do something ridiculously special, and maybe my mood was a little bit more optimistic than it ordinarily would.
You did mention earlier that Keith Tracy is probably outed as an Arsenal fan. I think just for anybody with a passing interest in Off the Ball, we should out you as an Arsenal fan. It's basically Arsenal fan radio from 9 o'clock tonight for the Champions League semi-final.
But I think we can out
an alternative commentary.
I think we can out ourselves because of the self-loathing that often goes on within the fan base, and quite rarely actually goes the other way. So,
I like the fact that you've decided that the weather being good outside is a bad omen. It's kind of like, you know, when your parents brought you to McDonald's when you're younger, it's like, oh, what's the bad news here? That this isn't usual. Yeah. This can't be good.
What's going wrong?
Yeah, the pathetic fallacy in all of this. But as we said at the top of the show, first semi-final, 16 years. I know you'll be getting to it in your news round, Cameron, but some people will be very keen to know the team news tonight. I think, actually, when it comes to Arsenal and to PSG, there was really only one
position that was up for grabs, really. Thomas Partey obviously not playing for Arsenal tonight, and the question was, would they make a replacement in midfield, or would they move Mikel Merino back to midfield and play a different forward? They've gone for the latter of those two options. So Mikel Merino starts in midfield and Leandro Trossard starts up front for Arsenal. So it's David Raya in goals, it's Timber, Saliba, Kivior and Lewis Skelly across the back, Odegaard, Rice and Merino in midfield with Saka, Trossard and Martinelli up front. For Paris Saint-Germain then, the question for them was, would they start Désiré Doué or would they start Bradley Barcola? They've gone with Doué up front instead of him. So it's Donnarumma in goal, it's a back four of Mendes, Pacho, Marquinhos and Hakimi, it's Vitinha, Fabian Ruiz, João Neves in midfield, and it's Kvaratskhelia, Dembele and Doué up front.
So you also watched the two legs of the other quarterfinal. Because I know, because you checked in on me and my health, even though it was the middle of the night, you got up both days. So you've seen PSG, and I have to say, you were here for the Liverpool game in Paris when, you know, the best performance in a defeat in probably the history of football. And I was working that night, so I was in and out and I saw a bit of it. But I have to say, when I saw them in Paris against Villa, I was like, this is the best team I've seen in years. Like in years, you know, when you're watching with that kind of level of detail and scrutiny and panic, basically, you know, when you're watching your own team. But at Villa Park, though they played well at times, they were got at and they were rattled. And I'd be so buoyed by that if I was an Arsenal fan, because there's a chance here. Like, you know what I mean? The problem is they could kill you. You know, they really good. They could just, like, they have so much talent there, and they link so well, and, you know, everything just sort of works together in beautiful harmony and so on, and they're great to watch and they can do so much damage. But I think they're brittle. Not much different had to happen for Villa to win that tie.
No, when the Conte goal went in, they looked completely shaken, didn't they? Like, it looked like, oh, this looks like it's going to be a collapse here, because they were conceding a good few chances and they kept getting broken down in midfield, and you just, I don't know, yeah. I think, don't forget as well,
the pressure that's on this club as well to go and win a Champions League. It's what they were bought for. It's what they've been designed for. They tried a new method and it didn't work. So you thought maybe there'd be a little bit of leeway for a couple of years as this team builds. Mm-hmm. But actually they were so impressive against Liverpool, and it immediately put them front and centre as favourites. And I think the pressure is just immediately back on now, that this has to be the year that PSG do it.
They did lose 3-1 at home to Nice, and it was pretty similar team to what's been named tonight. Yeah. Now maybe they had this week on the brain, but it's just,
they definitely do. You're looking for wrapped it up, but
I do think there may be concerns around the form of some players. Vitinha, when you listen to the likes of Julian Lloren, he's making the point that maybe his form has deserted him a little bit compared to his excellent form earlier in the season, and as you say, that results last weekend. But I think it's very much a case of, let's just switch this back on for the Champions League, because they have league on.
Well, Arsenal's results, if you want to start looking at the league.
Well, exactly.
You know,
what's interesting from an Arsenal perspective is that they've had obviously so many moments throughout this Premier League season where they've come up against low blocks, they've come up against teams without the same standard of player in their ranks, and they've struggled so much on so many different occasions against those sorts of teams. And then in the Champions League against better opposition, against more open opposition, they've really thrived. And I do wonder if that's going to play into Luis Enrique's mind whatsoever tonight, especially because you look at the Liverpool clash, and I know, look, the Aston Villa thing comes in the middle of it all, but the Liverpool clash, the fact that the second leg was in Anfield probably adds a different dynamic to things. You know, you're at home in the first leg against Liverpool, you're underdogs at that point, significant underdogs, you have to kind of go for it. I wonder, is there any little doubt in Luis Enrique's mind, who doesn't really tend to make those sorts of kind of concessions whatsoever when it comes to his tactical approach. I wonder tonight, is he just thinking, we'll take this back to Paris and let's see what happens? Or would that just be a complete abandonment of his own principles?
We haven't seen him in the knockout stages. They played at home both in the first leg both times, so it's hard to know, isn't it? But I think that they will be happy to try and counterattack tonight. Yeah, I do. But I think they could do that devastatingly.
The other fascinating aspect about this...
Doesn't mean they're playing for nil all if they do that, is what I mean.
No. Yeah. And look, I mean, I think Arsenal will also then on the flip side be very, very aware of what can happen on the counter-attack for PSG. But obviously these sides have played each other in this competition this season and Arsenal won 2-0. Like, I think we probably need to remind ourselves of the fact that PSG are here from a very low base earlier in the season in the Champions League, and what they've done in the second half of the season has been remarkable. When I was looking back at the teams, the PSG 11 tonight compared to back then, there are obviously a couple of changes. A lot of it is quite similar, but the biggest difference tonight is that you do have Ousmane Dembele in the team. He was left out of the team against Arsenal back in October because he did not comply with the expectations of the team. That was the reason listed. So, I mean, there's been obviously a little bit of a disagreement between himself and Luis Enrique earlier in the season, and that's been ironed out to spectacular effect. But I think one of the things we also forget about October is that Arsenal were missing Martin Odegaard at that point of the season as well. So, again, there are probably factors on both sides.
It's also a massive, massive tie in night for Arteta, you know, because I think we're looking at him going up against, you know, the wily old fox of European football last time. And now he's probably up against, like, the person who might be taking over Pep Guardiola's role as the preeminent coach in world football. And is Arteta up to it? And he might be, because he's done enough things to suggest to us that he's a wonderful manager. But we always have questions, don't we? And as much of that is about the management as the coaching. But, you know, time to prove us all wrong over the next two legs.
What Champions League final do you want to see?
I'd probably want to see Arsenal and Barcelona, to be honest.
Really?
Have it in the men's and women's.
So from a purely aesthetic point of view, or just...
Neutral, whatever drives you as a neutral.
I'd watch Luis Enrique bring PSG back to Barcelona, I have to say, or bring them to play Barcelona.
I don't want PSG to win it.
Really? Because of the ownership reasons?
Yeah, and I think that we've said it a couple of weeks ago, but I think because of the nature of this team now, that they're not Hollywood FC, I feel like a lot of that has gone under
the
radar.
I was about to say, they're a much more likable team, and it makes you forget the entire project is...
It kind of makes you realise, sport washing does work, because now... We're kind of on board, and they're suddenly PSG of all teams are this plucky band of misfits.
but misfits who spent, like, I mean, there was some stats going around that I don't have the hand about what they've spent to rebuild, you know, the team in the post-Galacticos era, and it is like hilarious, you know.
So let's look at it from a purely aesthetic point of view then, and we leave that to one side. Yeah. I would expect most people to want a PSG versus Barcelona final, just with the talent on display, the fact that we've got two teams very much on the way up.
Yerra. If ever a Kerry manor joined us in studio.
I'm not saying what is going to happen. What I'm saying
nobody wants it. It doesn't really matter. This is, you know, I'm only worried about from a small little Arsenal place. But from a general football point of view, I mean, we're irrelevant. We're not even in this semi-final. You
know? Yeah.
But I don't know. Is it not a case that people want to see Kvaratskhelia go up against Lamine Yamal in the Champions League final?
Would you not want to see... Saka?
I don't know. I'd like to see.
I do.
Arsenal have some exciting players too. This idea that, what about, like, you know, England's brave lion Declan Rice stepping up to that level, stepping up to that new
platform? I think there's a lot more threads bubbling along right now that you'd love to see in a final. Like the fact that, like, Saliba against Lamine Yamal, given Saliba's form right now, that'd be quite interesting to watch. Does he redeem himself after what's been a fairly unforgiving end to the season.
Okay, like,
it'd be quite cool.
You're saying Arsenal are the most likable team in Europe.
Not saying
we won't be sure for Barcelona.
one last nugget before we get on to your news round. One thing I just read literally before we came on air, the 1-0 to the Arsenal chant. That chant was born, apparently, in an away game against Paris Saint-Germain in 1994. So obviously... I read this. What's the...
In the Cup Winners' Cup run.
Winners' Cup run.
They won that year.
From angryofislington.com, this is my source. Ian Wright had put Arsenal 1-0 up after 35 minutes and we went into the break with this slender lead. By all accounts, the Pet Shop Boys version of Go West was played at halftime in the stadium, causing a spontaneous thought from some Arsenal fan to use the tune. The PSG fans were already singing Allez Paris Saint-Germain to the same tune, and no doubt the stadium DJ often played it precisely because the PSG fans sang it anyway, not just because the Europeans lap up cheesy disco pop. As it happened, the beautiful David Ginola, with his flowing locks and absence of dandruff, scored an equaliser only 5 minutes into the second half, cutting short the Village People revival in the Arsenal section of the crowd.
Okay, so
True or not true?
There's a lot of information in that which suggests to me it could be true. It feels very late. It felt like 1-0 to the Arsenal was like, again, I would have been, what, 9 at that time? So me growing up with that chant being part of my life would feel, I wouldn't know what age that would start. But at the same time, that was towards the end of the George Graham era. 1-0 to the Arsenal was 1989, 1991, those league titles. I can't believe that it started in 1994.
I like that it has a certain Fields of Athenry quality to it, and that it's born out of a moment that eventually ends in heartbreak.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't know the truth, but Angry of Islington has certainly said it. Go West by the Pet Shop Boys was released in 1993.
So that tune wasn't even around before.
It's definitely like from the late '70s when that emerges.
Let's do some more research on this. But when you Google Pet Shop Boys Go West 1993 comes up, we would appreciate anybody with greater clarity on this mystery. You can text us 087-918-180.
He'd know this straight away.
Cameron, where are we starting on the news round?
Well, we'll start with Republic of Ireland defender Louise Quinn, who's described her playing career as an absolute privilege after announcing her retirement today. So 16-year spell with the girls in green. She also called time on her club career with Birmingham City. So it's a blanket retirement today. Started out at senior level with Piemont United before going on to join Notts County and Arsenal, and it was with the Gunners that she won a Women's Super League in 2019 and a League Cup in 2018. She also had stints in Sweden and Italy, while at international level she made 121 appearances for Ireland and featured at the 2023 World Cup in Australia. Republic of Ireland manager Carla Ward is this week's guest on the Koi Gig Pod, and she paid tribute to Quinn.
An absolute leader. She's somebody that we're consistently on the phone with and seeing where she's at in terms of her rehab and recovery. But she leads in a way, on and off the pitch. She leads with the youngsters. She leads by example. She leads with her performances, the way she wears the shirt. And I think that, you know what, you could sit and talk about Louise, couldn't you, for hours and what she's done for Irish football. But she had an unbelievable club career. But I think she'll be hanging those boots with a legendary status, that's for sure. And the impact she's had on so many young footballers can't be understated.
Yeah, we're going to be joined by Amber Barrett and Claire Reardon a little later after 9 o'clock. A part of that chat is going to focus on paying tribute to Louise Quinn. And when you listen to people who've worked with her, who've played with her, who've coached her, that's when you get a real appreciation of Louise Quinn's impact on Irish football, because even solely as fans and as people who've watched her, she is unquestionably a legend of the game. And then you hear about the person that she is, and it's even more so.
You rarely hear a sports person have such, I was going to say universal respect. There's loads of people with universal respect, but universal kind of adoration almost, you know, and you'll hear it when we played talking to the two girls later on. But yeah, she's unbelievable. Such a big loss as well, though, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Like, she's such a big part of what Ireland can do. And like, obviously, sometimes I think in the later Eilean Gleeson era, we might have resorted to a little bit too much of throw Louise up front, that's not
prime attacking threat.
But as a kind of an attacking threat and a defensive rock, like, she was so central to everything Ireland did. And then you take into account that, like, all of her caps beside Niamh Fahey and all of her caps, and Diane Caldwell and all of her caps, and they're all gone at the same time. It's a real changing of the guard end of an era for Irish football. Like,
she scored, I remember my first ever, like, I think match report for a women's game was the Ireland-Australia game in Tala back in 2022, which is just at the time where I think the power era was kind of at its lowest, where they thought, oh, what's going to happen here? This doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And they beat Australia 3-2. And Louise Quinn scored that night. And it's just, it just feels now in posterity, and now we can wax lyrical about it all, that it's so great that such a great servant to Irish football was able to make an impact on what feels like the turning point in that team's fortune, and because they go on to qualify for the World Cup and go on from strength to strength. But that night felt like such a, oh, something's happening here, and for her to be directly involved in that, is it tells you everything you need to know about her impact.
For sure. And hopefully we'll speak to Louise on the show this week as well. We are getting shouted at. We are getting shouted at in the text line with regards to... I will say my Pet Shop Boys, Village People kind of chat there. It was a bit of a faux pas on my point. You'll just have to accept the fact that my 70s, 80s knowledge is not amazing. I wasn't quite aware of the fact that the Village People song came so far in advance of the Pet Shop Boys.
No, not at all.
Steve Daunt.
I didn't know you knew about the Village
People. Our friend here in Block Caps, Go West's Village People single, late 70s or early 80s. Sean in Dublin, lads, a Pet Shop Boys song is to the tune of the USSR national anthem well before 1994. Somebody also saying it was also a hit for the Village People in the 70s, ... The ... I always find is just you are an idiot.
You're reading too much into it there.
No, I think that's the sentiment trying to be expressed there, I reckon.
100%. Please forgive me. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
We'll go to Matters Arsenal, because Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta says he feels the weight of history ahead of tonight's first leg in their Champions League semi-final with Paris Saint-Germain. They've already gotten past defending champions Real Madrid. They won that quarter-final 5-1 over the two legs. And Arteta says there's been a new energy from the players since rounding off that win at the Bernabeu.
I think probably you feel it because it's been so much work done before, and because the players are really resonating with what we are doing, and they feel, yeah, we can face these guys and we can be better than them. And that's the feeling we had against Madrid or the previous round or through the group stages. And that's how we feel today. I look at them in the eyes and they can't wait to play.
That kicks off at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, of matters more important to Arsenal, we've got further details on the Go West situation here. Hi lads, Justin from D12 here. I'm not an Arsenal fan, but angry at Islington may be onto something. Pet Shop Boys' cover of Go West was around September 93, and first time I remember Arsenal fans singing it with gusto was the Cup Winners' Cup final in Copenhagen against Parma.
Yeah, I did think the level of detail in what you read out was, you know, fairly... you would think that somebody who remembered that moment would know if Arsenal fans had sang it before that day.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it does feel like it's real. It's just, it wasn't even that I was disputing it. It's just that it feels shocking to me. Because again, it feels like something I would have heard sang at Arsenal as I was like developing a love for football in the late 80s, early 90s, but obviously not.
It has the kind of the timbre or the tint of a Reddit comment with someone underneath going this and the up emoji, where it's like, yeah, okay, this might be legitimate. Feels like he put way too much thought into it. It's like a 4-star review.
It's a long blog post.
Would you take 1-0 to the Arsenal tonight?
You would. I'd bite your hand off for a 1-0 to the Arsenal tonight.
And would you feel confident about next week then if you had 1-0 to the Arsenal tonight?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not confident, but I don't know. Optimistic. Arsenal with any sort of lead.
And then the sun will be out and you'll get all depressed about it again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got one other football story for us?
Yes. Sorry, one more thing. Wenger came in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And this chant, this is the whole like, oh, Wenger's come in and he's completely switched up. It's not 1-0 to the Arsenal anymore. Like as if this was this inbuilt thing going back 40 years. It was only 2 years.
Yeah. Although it takes on many different tones. Like the first Arsenal game I ever remember going to was the 99 Community Shield or Charity Shield, as it was in the old Wembley. And Arsenal beat Manchester United 2-1. And then everybody sang 2-1 to the Arsenal. Yeah, so it just takes on every other.
But it was more that it was like 1-0 to the Arsenal was a specific, we have a back four that nobody can get past.
Do you reckon that was one of Wenger's changes, is that you should know that's from the Village People and not the Pet Shop Boys? Is one of those.
Now, there is, I don't want to complicate matters too much here, but there is apparently some sort of footage from a 1939 game involving Arsenal where the commentator says, and it's finished 1-0 to the Arsenal and that's the way we like it.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't go to the tune of Go West, obviously, but the 1-0 to the Arsenal had become a phrase before that. Adding it to the tune was a 1990s thing. The 1-0 to the Arsenal George predated Fulby. It by about 60 years.
I think I just got a Reid Fever pitch again.
Absolutely. I think that would be...
I might not have any new information, but I'll enjoy it.
I think that would be a good outcome for anybody. Mm. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, FIFA will fund research into the cause behind the rise in ACL injuries among female footballers. The year-long study is set to begin at Kingston University, London next month. The research will focus on whether hormonal fluctuations during menstrual cycles are a factor in the proliferation of cruciate ligament injuries in women's football. Studies are already suggesting that female footballers are 2 to 6 times more likely to suffer the injuries than their male counterparts.
The most important part about this is that it's a study. It needs to be one of about 100 studies, because almost all, and this goes across outside of sports injuries as well, but almost all medical science and studies for ailments that both sexes can get, so like take out pregnancy issues and so on, are for male bodies. You know, so it's like the how to you know, fix an ACL is the research is for men.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just applied to the woman. And that's like, that's across the board with lots of different things. But yeah, so it's just like every time you hear of a study like this or something like this being brought up, it is actually like incredibly positive news because they're starting from a base of nothing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. On matters less important, there has been a couple of texts talking about your distaste for Paris Saint-Germain. One person's been in touch to say, I find Wrexham just as objectionable as Paris Saint-Germain, partly because I can't stand Ryan Reynolds. While another text has been in touch to say Barcelona's full of oil state money through sponsorship. So get off your high horse.
Oof.
Where do you want to take us next? To the Crucible, I believe, Cameron?
Yeah, Ronnie O'Sullivan. He'll take a 6-2 lead into the second session of his World Snooker Championship quarterfinal. The seven-time winner resumes his match against Xi Jiahui tomorrow morning, while Judd Trump has a 5-3 advantage over Luca Brasil, so the first to 13 frames will progress. John Higgins is 5-3 up against Mark Williams in the last eight clash between two legends of the sport. Their last eight match has just resumed in Sheffield.
Mark Williams and John Higgins, their combined age?
99.
You were there when I was talking about this yesterday. Yeah, but it was Mark Williams' 50th birthday a month ago, and it's John Higgins' 50th birthday in a month. So if you combine them,
wow,
it's 100 years almost to the day. I doubt there's any other sport that you'd have a world quarterfinal with two people in it at a combined age of 100, but I love it. I never want them to go away.
I'm pretty sure these two guys were playing each other before Village People did their version of Go West.
No, they're class of 92.
Yeah.
You know, that's with Ronnie, who's in the quarterfinal and sauntering into the semis, and Ronnie O'Sullivan, who like did an interview, like is so downhearted, but he's sauntering through the tournament he wasn't going to play in, and he's in great shape to get to the semi-final. He hasn't got a name of note waiting for him in the semi-final. And then what happens?
It's such a comfort blanket. Like when you turn on ESPN Classic and like you'd see like the 1989 Cup Final or something on, you can turn on modern day snooker and get the warm embrace of the 90s. In
you don't want
day.
New names.
No.
You know?
It would totally screw it up. We have time for one more story, Cameron. Do you want to do the boxing story? This is quite interesting.
Yeah, so undefeated Galway Weatherweight is set to headline an event at Pearce Stadium this summer. I actually don't have the name of the welterweight to hand, but...
It's Kieran Malloy, isn't it?
Kieran Malloy, yeah. Sorry. So this is a really interesting story. So apparently Dillian White and Huey Fury, who's the cousin of Tyson, are also in talks for this event at Pearce Stadium in Salt Hill.
June, yeah. So this is, I think the 42 had this earlier on today, so I think it's still in the very early stages of solid information. But I just find it fascinating that we're at the stage. We had Roddy Collins in with Podge a couple of weeks ago on when you were away, and he was fighting, he had his third fight, and we were talking about the fact that he could work and still get fights under his resume because we have cards in this country again. And the path for an Irish boxer is completely different than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And now we're talking about, you know, open air events again. Like, you know, it's incredible. I don't know when the last time we've had, you were saying that we had something in Windsor Park a few years ago, but south of the border, there's nothing coming to mind.
Obviously,
you know, nothing at all.
Andy Lee was due to fight at Thomond, and that never actually happened in the end, which was a great shame. We should actually finish up on the racing as well, because obviously it was day one at the Punchestown Festival today, Cameron. So after the break, we're going to be speaking to Graham Hunter. We've got episode 6 of Diverta coming up after 8 o'clock. Keith Tracy will be with us later on, so you might just bring us the racing before we wrap up.
Yeah, Marine Lachanel claimed victory in the featured champion chase on day one of the Punchestown Festival. The 2-1 shot trained by Barry Connell with Sean Flanagan on board beat Captain Guinness, ridden by Rachel Blackmore. The Joseph O'Brien trained Solness came third with 11-10 favourite Factophile finishing fourth.
This week on Diverted.
I was always around football. I used to carry the players' boots. I remember when my grandfather would bring the Brazilian players and I would wash their boots and everything. So it's definitely, football is built and stored in my DNA.
In episode 6, we're going to Central America and we'll be taking you to a Belizean Premier League game. We'll be visiting the basketball-obsessed highlands of Guatemala.
You need to have a name model that people support. Like, for instance, basketball, you have LeBron James. It starts like that. You have to find good players so that you can sell it to the public so they can come out and support.
And we will experience firsthand the 2 minutes and 58 seconds where it looked like Costa Rica were going to qualify for the knockout stages of the 2022 World Cup.
I am once again embracing my new brothers.
What are you doing?
Creating chaos.
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.